Gera can hit them. Did! Oh, what a goal by Zoltan Gera! And still Baptista, yes! It's Cavani! It's fantastic!
One from David Villa. Oh, great finish!
He's done just that, he scored! Juninho's done it!
Yakubu making another glimpse of goal here!
Hello and welcome to the Streets Won't Forget podcast. I'm your host, Dan Mountney, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-hosts. Two men who, for some reason, have developed an obsession with cannoli. It's Ben Woolley and Harry Martinez.
Oh, that's going to make no sense without the context.
I'm not going to lie, Panic wrote this about 5 minutes ago, so...
Can only get better.
Oh, man. I love that every intro he does, the wonderful gets more and more sarcastic.
It does, yeah, it does.
We're going to get to like 100 episodes. It's going to be like my dickhead co-commentators.
I'm sick and fucking tired of them. It's Ben Woolley and Harry Martinez.
Sick of them and their cannoli adventures.
How are we, boys? Are we excited for a jam-packed episode?
It's good to be back.
It's never good to be away.
That's very true.
Oh, I do love playing away. Well, let's get right into it, because I think we've got one of the most deserving Andy Kaz of the Week winners ever. Harry, who have we got?
We have, from a couple of weeks ago, when Oxford won the League One playoffs against Bolton at Wembley. At 5 a.m. that next morning, caught on a Ring doorbell camera, we had Oxford midfielder Ruben Rodriguez stealing a kid's scooter from outside his house at 5 a.m.
I had seen this. This is excellent.
Oh, man.
The best thing about this was the woman who posted under it. She posted under it. Livid is an understatement. My four-year-old son spent his own money to buy this scooter that he really wanted. If people know who these people are, please message me. In the meantime, if anyone sees a Spider-Man scooter laying about, please let me know. And what someone said is, why is your four-year-old already saving money?
What money is your four-year-old making? What fucking graft have they got?
Fucking Ruben Rodriguez nicking it.
That's
a good night out.
The thing is, he's done exactly what any drunk person would do. You walk past something and you think, I could just nick that. It'll be fine. No,
Harry, we're not like that.
No, I know what you two have been up to. Fucking hell. We better not put that on the internet.
Oh, dear.
Well, he's been stealing hearts.
Oh. You can't see it, but I just did a smoulder into my window.
Do you start mewing?
That's enough of that image. Before we go on to a couple of things Harry has got, we've developed the obsession with stolen trophies.
Yes.
I have found another one. This is actually a recent news story. So the headline in The Independent is Diego Maradona's stolen World Cup golden ball trophy to be auctioned in Paris.
Superb.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Hold on. That's not stolen anymore then.
How
that is found.
You publicly flog a stolen trophy?
No, okay, so it was returned to Maradona and is now to be auctioned off, but it was stolen. It's expected to fetch...
Imagine it's just like, the trophy's been nicked, we're never going to get this back, and then some kid's selling it in France.
It's expected to fetch millions of dollars, so apparently... No one knows how it was stolen, but some of the suggestions are it was lost during a poker game or sold to pay off debts, while others suggest that Maradona had it stored in a safe in Naples, and it was robbed by local gangsters. According to the story told by a reformed mafia member. So, and it was then melted down into gold pieces. So I think if it's being auctioned off, I don't think it was melted down into gold pieces, but it was still stolen by somebody.
I want to know how much it's worth, because then you can accumulate how much cocaine he was able to sell it for.
Yeah, how much of the trophy is missing? Like, is it 20% smaller?
It's just chipping bits off for a
bet
gram.
He was fuming when he found out the trophy was round. He can't fucking rack a line up with it.
Hey, there's one man who could. Bottle. If there is one man who could, it's Diego Maradona.
Diego Armando Maradona.
Oh, fantastic. Harry, I believe you've got a few bits for us as well.
I do. I have two things for us. The first one...
Oh.
So,
I've been trawling the internet, and this is what I've found.
Yeah, we've seen this, you know, this mini tournament of legends that's gone out.
Oh, yes. I fear this may be so, Ashley Williams related.
Oh, I was trying to keep it for Wooly not to hear this. But Wooly, I'm going to read you some of the teams, and you've just pick up on what Dan has said there, okay? So we'll start with, this is also fucking weird, Cafu's Challengers. So that team is David James, Cafu, Jose Basingua, Michael Essien, Robert Pires, Predrag Mijatović, and Dimitar Berbatov. You know, decent team. Decent team.
What is Jose Basingua doing in there, by the way?
Right, it
What's
gets
David
worse.
David James though. Doing in there?
Calamity
exactly.
James.
This gets worse. So then we've got Vieira's
James
veterans.
Is flapping at a cross. That's what he's doing.
Vieira's veterans. Julio Cesar, Marco Materazzi, Bakary Sagna, David Silva, Patrick Vieira, John Obi Mikel, Stefan Freund, and Luis Garcia. What a,
right, okay.
What a team. Then we've got Kaká's Kickers, which I think is probably the best team, apart from everyone in the midfield is going to get a yellow card. You've got Jens Lehmann, Mikel Silvestre, Esteban Cambiaso, Gaizka Mendieta, Mathieu Flamini, Kaká, Gilberto Silva, and Fernando Morientes.
Right.
Decent team.
Not bad.
Then we come to
There's a couple of
the
weird
weirdest
there,
team I've ever seen. Purely for one man being in there. So Figo's Fighters, Vitor Baia, Roberto Carlos, Michel Salgado, Claude Makélélé, Christian Carambo, Luis Figo, Joe Cole, and Ashley Williams.
Has Ashley Williams ever played in the Champions League? Surely not.
Fuck knows.
How is he
no,
in
the... He would have done Europa League with Swansea.
They had somebody else in there, and they pulled out, and they've panicked, and last minute they've gone, well, Ashley Williams is doing punditry for somebody or other. We'll just get him in there.
Yeah, like if this is being shown on TNT, he was there as a commentator. Someone's pulled out with a hammy injury, and they've gone, oh, Ash, you're going to have to fill in.
Well, you say that. They could have nicked someone from CBS's commentary team because they had some world class names in there.
That's true.
And also no, Dora the Explorer.
Oh, fucking
yeah, to be fair, Luis Figo's already in this. I'm surprised they didn't put Dora on the other wing.
See, Alessandro Del Piero was right there.
Did anybody watch the CBS coverage? What was Dora's role? Do we know?
See Dora interviewing Jamie Carragher and trying to get him to say Internazionale, like, properly?
No.
Oh, have you not seen that clip? So basically, he's going, Dora, how do I say Internazionale? She's going, let me help you. Internazionale. And they'd all turn to Jamie, and he sat there and he goes, Internazionale. Dora goes, nope, not quite there.
Dora plays the role that Ben and I play for you on this podcast.
They're trying to teach Jamie. Yeah, they're trying to teach him. And obviously, okay. The man can't read, so he's a visual learner.
Oh, yes. I really hoped she was doing, like, the expert refereeing analysis you normally get in the Premier League coverage.
We've got Peter Walton and Dora the Explorer stood
next
to
They're about as qualified as each other. So.
Yeah. Anyway, my next thing, this one's pretty good, and this might take you a couple of seconds to think of yours, but the other day, Robert Earnshaw posted something special that happened to him in his life. And his son has just signed his first contract for Manchester United's academy. Now, his son is called Silver Mexes Tyler Earnshaw.
Fuck off.
Right? So someone said, get your Silver Mexes Tyler Earnshaw name by combining your favourite Abu Dhabi era City signing, your favourite Euro 2012 France squad member, your fave former Sky Sports commentator, and your fave player to score a Premier League hat-trick at the Valley. Mine's Torre Diarra, Grey Mendonca. It's superb, isn't it?
If you want me to come up with this, I have no idea of anybody who scored a hat-trick at the Valley.
Yeah, I'm going to need a few minutes.
Oh, fucking hell. And that Charlton's
Harry, have you got a list of people who scored at the Valley?
I mean, surely one of the Darren or Marcus Bent has probably scored a hat-trick there. Players who have scored a hat-trick
I was literally
at the
just Googling that.
I'm also having to look up the France squad from Euro 2012. God knows who Deschamps picked. It could have been anybody.
Last one I remember was Kevin Lisby. Let's have it.
Kevin Lisby.
Wait, hold up here. One of the goals was a bit dubious, but he was awarded it. You know who my favourite player to score a hat-trick at the Valley is?
Go on.
Yaya Sanogo.
Well, fuck off.
No.
Yep.
It's not the Emirates Cup. This can't be allowed to stand.
Oh, Josh McGuinness. Josh McGuinness is on there. Chris Iwolumo.
I'll take Kevin Lisby. So my name would be... Wait, what order was it in?
That was the last. So City signing France, Sky Sports commentator.
I would be Yaya Menez, Drury Lisby.
Drury Lisby.
I've got to go. I don't know who was in that French 2012 squad.
There's some awful names in there. Abu Diaby got called up in that.
Did he really?
Yeah, but how quickly did he pull out due to injury?
Probably within hours.
For some reason, if you Google France 2012 squad, the result that comes up is just Olivier Giroud. So there we go.
Mine would be, which I don't know which country it sounds like I'm from now, but Rubinho Malouda. Rubinho Malouda McCoist. And it's got to be Sanogo probably, isn't it? Because what a time that is. Although it says definitely not a hat trick, but it definitely was.
What possessed Robert Earnshaw to call his child that?
Silver Mech says Tyler Earnshaw.
Have you ever seen the Robert Earnshaw tweets about Elon Musk?
Yeah.
Oh God.
Have you not seen them?
Not.
Well, this will fill the time. This will fill the time while you decide your name. Basically, Robert Earnshaw was once tweeting about Elon Musk, and he came up with the theory that Elon Musk was actually an alien who was just trying to get back to his home planet with SpaceX.
Wasn't there one where Robert Earnshaw outed himself as not being able to count? It was suddenly like Elon's taught me so much from like English to maths, and everyone was like, what do you mean maths? And he was like, well, you know, I can't do my times tables that well. What the fuck are you on about, Rob?
Isn't he the only... I'm sure there's some stat about he's the only player to score a hat-trick in all of the top five English leagues, the Welsh League.
Yes, I think it is something like that.
And the Euros, something like that.
Or European qualifiers, maybe.
Yeah, God knows.
Because we did not reach a major tournament with him in. I'm telling you that now.
Ben, have you got this name or what?
Yeah, I have.
Go on.
So my new name is Mangala Kashelli Sanogo Tildesley. Let's have it, boys.
It's Tildesley Sanogo.
Sorry, Tildesley Sanogo, yeah.
When
my parents hyphenated the name, they got it the wrong way around.
Harry, how much money have you to change your name by Deepole to, Rubinho?
I tell you what, just cover the cost of me changing my name by Deepole.
That's your prize. Whoever won the FPL, it's James. Harry's going to change his name to whatever you want, whatever your name is from this.
He would 100%. He would make me change it to Jason Mohammed all day. That is exactly what he would do.
Oh, it should have been Manish for my favorite.
I was
going to
say, what about Manish? Get in the bar.
Get in the fucking bar.
Right, before we go absolutely off the rails, let's get on to the main part of the episode. Yeah, true. It's probably going to get worse from here as well. It's safe to say here at the Streets Don't Forget podcast, we absolutely love the TV show Premier League Years. It's probably one of the great TV shows of all time for a football fan. So we decided we wanted to do one of our own, looking back on the 2023-24 Premier League season. I've even done puns and all for each month. I've got news stories, I've run us through results, the tables, how the season went. You boys have got your favourite games, your favourite moments, so let's get right into it with August. It saw the season get underway and champions-elect Manchester City set the early pace with a 3-0 win over newly promoted Burnley. Arsenal was strengthened in the summer with the £100 million signing of Declan Rice, and their title charge got off to a winning start against Nottingham Forest. It was former podcast favourites Brighton and Newcastle, who were the big winners on opening day as they thumped Luton and Aston Villa.
Down the right-hand side, Walker, crossing position. On it goes to Alvarez, near the penalty spot. Haaland hits the back of the net! Can you believe it? Of course you can believe it! It's Erling Haaland again!
It was a pretty... It felt like an underwhelming start to the season, I think, the first month. Mm. There wasn't kind of any real excitement.
No, because the big teams were winning and the teams that got promoted weren't.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind it was
business as usual. Yeah.
From a newly promoted team. You want Luton to shock somebody or Burnley to shock somebody, but have we got any favourite games or has it gone a bit under the radar?
My favourite moment from that month was Alex Ferguson picking out on the opening weekend. They asked him which team he thought, you know,
is his
pick for the year, and he went, "Well, I know they've just been beaten 5-1, but Aston Villa." And everyone's like, "What the fuck are you on about, Fergie?"
He was right.
And they go
he
on and qualify for Champions League. I know, it's unbelievable. Well, bit of hindsight there.
I figured you'd have all the results, so I picked out some of my favourite stats.
Oh, go on.
Because you know I love my stats. So this was the first time... I've gone for the Newcastle-Villa game, I think, was the standout. It was the first time Villa conceded 5 on the opening day since 1951. And it was the earliest two different players had scored on their debuts in Prem history. In Tonali and Diaby. Yeah.
Well, Tonali's season went well, didn't it?
I've completely forgotten Sandro Tonali plays Premier League football.
It's outstanding business from AC Milan, that, I'm going to be honest.
It is. Yeah.
It's a real shame he didn't completely forget how to slap a bell.
Really?
Yeah, do you reckon AC Milan, with the transfer money, just put it all on him being banned within the next 6 months?
Oh, that would be funny.
Imagine that. How big's your war chest for next season? Quite big. We put all the money of Sandro Tonali on a bet that he was going to get banned.
60 million quid. Anyway,
I'm not paying that one out.
Right, let's move into September, and this is where the puns begin. So September saw the rack crisis hit the front page, as serious concerns were raised about building safety at schools across the UK. It was Everton's season that appeared to be crumbling too. as an 8-point deduction for financial breaches and no wins from their opening 4 games left them rooted to the foot of the table.
I can see the orange and black background with September written on it right now.
If anyone hasn't watched Premier League years, this is exactly what you'd get in the show.
It is exactly.
You just wouldn't get three idiots laughing about it on the show, you're going to have to deal with it. Luton were also struggling at the bottom, but when the two sides met at Goodison to close out the month, it would be the Hatters who secured a vital win.
In it goes towards the far post, and Morris has put it in. Everton punished again from a set piece, and they won't be happy with that defending.
Manchester City were still top of the pile, despite defeat to Wolves on matchday 7. But Arsenal and Tottenham, who played out a 2-2 draw in the North London derby, were just a point behind in second and third. Aston Villa had recovered from a tough start to climb into the European places, while Manchester United and Chelsea were languishing in mid-table. Now, the big talking point from this month was obviously the VAR balls up in the Tottenham v Liverpool game. Mm-hmm. What were they thinking?
This was mad, though, because they...
He didn't intervene, did they?
They said the guys doing the VAR had been in the UAE the previous day doing a match there and had come back and obviously fucking jet-lagged. And everyone was like, how on earth have they been allowed to do this?
Yeah.
And then for them to come out afterwards and have to release the audio from the clip, it's wild.
They essentially got confused, didn't they? So they believed that the goal had been ruled out rather than given... And they said, "Yeah, go ahead with your decision."
Yeah, check over.
And then the game carried on. And they were like, "Is this so?" The audio clip is so funny when you hear the guy go, "Oh no, we've made a mistake."
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you'd feel sorry for them if literally anything had changed in VAR for the rest of the season, but it continued to be dog shit.
That was the worst of a pretty bad.
That was the top.
Oh, yeah,
that
was
top of the tree. My favorite moment from September. And I think you two would probably agree with this. Spurs scoring 98th and 100th minute winner goals against Sheffield United at home and then going and celebrating in front of the fans like they put themselves one game away from winning the league.
Well, this was the beginning of what we'll get onto for October, wouldn't it? Of Spurs' incredible title run.
Yeah. Ange's back-to-back-to-back manager of the month, despite playing all the bottom six.
Although, my favourite was hat-trick day. Because there was that one match where Ferguson, Haaland and Son all scored. And, another little factoid for you, it was the joint most hat-tricks scored in one day since 1995.
Nice.
Damn, the three that
got
it there.
To Evan Ferguson.
Yeah, you know
he
who got it there?
Disappeared after that game.
It was Tony Yeboah, Robbie Fowler, and Alan Shearer.
That is a front three for the ages.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Who wins in a 3-on-3 between those two?
That's how I see it has to be Yeboah, Fowler, and Shearer. I think the Premier League's all-time top scorer against the other three.
Yeboah, Fowler, and Shearer now over the other three.
I don't want to see any of those three try and run after Erling Haaland, I'm going to be honest.
That's true. What happened? Yeah, going back, what happened to Evan Ferguson? Did he get injured?
He must
for the
have
rest
been injured,
or
right?
He was a $100 million pound sale to United waiting to happen, wouldn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, I think his value's plummeted through the floor.
He suffered from Mateta's success.
Apparently, he played 27 Premier League games this season.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, and only got 6
goals. They could not score a goal, to be fair. Yeah, they could not score a goal. Three of those coming in one game.
Yeah, Brighton were just generally, apart from the 2 months where we supported them relentlessly, were just a bit shit this season.
Yeah.
We're cursed, mate. That's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. As for Spurs, it's so funny looking at Ange then and Ange now. He's absolutely hating his life. We'll obviously come on to Ange as we go towards the back end of the season. Funnily enough, there's not much about him in the middle. Spurs basically played for the start and the end of the season in complete opposite types of form. But we'll move into October now, and that saw the West Midlands to Manchester section of HS2 cancelled. And it was Manchester City's season that looked like it was going off the rails when they met Arsenal at the Emirates.
Oh, yes.
As far as Havertz, Martinelli! Oh, yes! Gabriel Martinelli is back with a bang! Tiny deflection, but who cares? Critical strike! Arsenal 1, City 0!
A late Gabriel Martinelli strike secured a vital 1-0 win for the Gunners, but it was unbeaten North London rivals Tottenham who topped the table at the end of the month. Manchester did stay blue as City beat United 3-0 at Old Trafford in the derby on matchday 10, while Liverpool, who were also keeping pace at the top, beat Everton 2-0 in the Merseyside derby. At the bottom, Sheffield United looked doomed already, losing 9 of their opening 10 games and failing to win, while Bournemouth's decision to replace Gary O'Neill with Andoni Iraola was coming under scrutiny after just one win all season. Yeah, there was a period, I think, was Rodri either injured or suspended, one of the two, and he missed 2 or 3 games, and it looked like their season was going to fall apart, and then
he comes back. Yeah, and then he just
fuming. Why can't... I don't wish injury on anybody, but why can't he suffer like a 3 or 4 month injury? Just give somebody else a chance.
They lost De Bruyne for a while. They lost Haaland for a while. They were still winning. They lose Rodri, they don't win.
Oh,
I don't get how he's
that.
Not player of the season.
His winning run is over now, isn't it? Because he played in the FA Cup final.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, is it? I guess in the Premier League he's still unbeaten. But
The standout for this as well, like, we joke about it, that Spurs initial run was very impressive. They got 26
it was,
out of 30
until at the end of the season,
like
you look who they played.
Oh, yeah. But like, you sit there going, Ange had the most points out of any manager's first 10 games, and they're all losing their minds, and now we're like, yeah, how's fifth, lads?
I think what happened was, the first 10 or so games, he was playing this system, and people were like, well, this is difficult to deal with. And then everybody went, actually, we know how to deal with this.
No, it's not.
And then they all dealt with it.
Well, they played all the bottom six in their opening 7 games, I think it was. Yeah. So everyone's like, wow, they're a really good side. You're like, well, you're playing teams that are adjusting to the Premier League and to his style of football that no one's seen before in this league. And then he's going to come up against City and they go, oh, well, that's easy. We just have to do this.
Like, yeah, playing such a high press against teams that know how to deal with a high press is just suicide.
Yeah, and then trying to play out from the back with players that aren't comfortable doing that against a team with a high press, you're going to lose the ball. Like, I remember when they played Burnley, and Burnley looked like they were going to stick them on.
They just
pressing them
became
high.
A bit underwhelming, didn't they, towards the end?
They started playing better teams.
Let's talk a bit about Bournemouth as well, because obviously, you know, we gave them big praise on our end-of-season awards episode. Go and listen to that if you haven't. But it did look a bit ropey at the start.
Yeah. I mean, Iraola's football apparently was taking a long time to integrate into the team. And I think that was evident to see by the end of the season, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, they were obviously excellent towards the back end. And I think we even said at the start of the season when we did our transfer special that they'd had the best transfer window. So,
yeah,
again, come here for the best opinions. That's where you'll find them.
God, yeah. I never thought we'd be saying that about our podcast.
Yeah, it's only taken 52 episodes, but finally we've
had a good opinion.
Yeah.
Between us and Fergie, we've got it all covered, really.
Yeah, that's 99% Fergie, 1% us.
I didn't say it wasn't. I'm just saying between us and Fergie, we've got it all covered.
Well, let's move into November now. November saw fireworks for Bonfire Night, and at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium as well, there were two red cards for Spurs, which saw their unbeaten start ended by London rivals Chelsea. Arsenal's unbeaten start would also be ended in controversial fashion against Newcastle, but the Gunners would end the month at the top of the table. Man City and Chelsea would also play out the game of the season in a ding-dong affair at Stamford Bridge that ended 4-4. Yep. It would be a good month for the red half of Manchester too, as United swept the monthly awards, with Alejandro Garnacho winning goal of the month for his stunning overhead kick against Everton.
Fellow for Garnacho! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! That is one of the great goals in front of a stunned Gladys Street.
At the bottom, Sheffield United finally picked up a first win of the season against Wolves, while Luton looked like they were up for the fight, holding Liverpool to a 1-1 draw. There were some cracking games in November. That the 4-1, the 4-1 at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is a personal favourite. The two red cards and then the ridiculously high line that Spurs decided to play.
This is what I put down for.
Two centre backs and nothing else.
Playing on the sodding halfway line with two red cards is elite stuff.
Nicholas Jackson scoring 4.
You know you've maybe got it wrong when Nicholas Jackson is running in behind you and scoring. Yeah.
So
and scoring more than one, more than two, and more than three.
Yeah. I've got a couple of tasty facts from this month as well.
That is the highest line ever seen in Premier League history.
Yeah. Well, obviously, Haaland became the fastest player to reach 50 Prem goals because he just isn't human. But that City-Chelsea 4-all, it was the first time Chelsea had both scored and conceded 4 goals in a league match since, like, 08. The first time City had done so since 1961. And the first time the pair had done it against each other since 1956.
Wow.
I was a big fan of that Garnacho goal. Not obviously for the strike itself, but more for the fact that there was the Everton protest against the Premier League for the points deduction. And then he goes and does that within 10 minutes.
It's the most Everton thing that could have happened.
The silence around the ground. There wasn't even enough air in the stadium for the Everton boo. That's the only letdown with that.
You can't help but wonder, like, what if they'd gone down? Like, how far away would you be able to hear the Everton boo?
It's all I
game?
Wished for. That is all I wished for was the
you
Everton
would,
boo.
You
I
would
think
hear
it
that
registered
across the country,
scale.
Yeah.
You'd hear that in Greece.
Yeah. You know they say, oh, you go to Dover on a clear day and you can see the Eiffel Tower. If you go to Paris on a clear day, you can hear the Everton boo. Yeah.
If you go to space, you can see the Great Wall of China. If you go to space, you can hear the Everton boo when they get relegated, mate.
Yeah, you can see their banners, like, deriding the Premier League as corrupt.
Let's also talk a bit about Sheffield United, because I know they technically weren't the worst Premier League team of all time. Derby still hold that dubious honour. But they would have to be up there with the worst.
They gave like a solid go at beating them. Fuck me.
Like I said at the beginning of the season, I don't think we'll ever see anyone beat that Derby record purely because of the money that's in it now. You're able to sign at least 2 quality players.
Yeah, you're able to buy your way to 12 points.
However, I do not think that if they did not have a little bit of money, Sheffield United would have ended the season with about 5 points.
Yeah,
they were dreadful.
They couldn't do anything.
And Paul Heckenbottom, I didn't think he was a good coach at Champ either. They should have come straight back up, and they never did.
Mean, we say this as well, like, the money in it now is why they stayed up. With ridiculous Premier League money, they got 4 more points than Derby. So it takes 100 million to move from 12 points to 16 points.
That's what I'm saying is I think they have been saved by a couple of big transfers.
They won 3 games, and honestly, I don't remember any of them.
I remember him trying to beat Spurs and losing.
That seems to be the recurring thing that they did 28 times.
That happened in about 30-odd games, funny enough, where they tried to win and didn't.
Did they beat Luton?
They must have done.
They beat Everton. I know they beat Everton. Yeah.
They beat Wolves. And I can't remember the other games. At least Luton put up a fight. Like,
yeah. Luton were decent.
They did. I think they did far better than anybody would have thought they would.
They were 6 points.
And they
six,
made some really shrewd signings. Worth... Yeah, they made some good signings. You know, it was a team that came from playoffs. I thought they, and yeah. they, to be honest with you, they obviously played well at Championship to get into playoffs, but that squad should have been nowhere near it. And then they come up to the Prem, and I thought they were decent.
Yeah, I think they themselves would admit they probably weren't expecting to stay up.
Yeah.
No.
They have helped revive the career of Ross Barkley, though, who's apparently on his way
literally,
back to
I've
Aston
got
Villa.
This later on in the section.
Yeah. Good on him. He's done very well, Ross Barkley. Carlton Morris can fuck up.
He's though. Almost... If Adam Warren hadn't moved in January to Crystal Palace, I think Ross Barkley could have been in the England squad.
Oh, that's a bold prediction.
I'm not entirely sure I agree.
I think he was on the cusp of being called up, I reckon.
I'm sorry.
Only to the preliminary. I don't think he would have actually gone.
If Gareth Southgate won't pick English players like Tomori who play abroad, do you think he's going to pick Ross Barkley at fucking Luton?
He's honestly more likely to pick Ross Barkley than
Yeah, this
guy.
Is true, actually. Bayern
Munich
like
picked
that.
Vincent Kompany, mate. Like, you know, strange
things
happen.
What the fuck is... Right, ignore that. Otherwise, we're going to get into a massive tangent about managers.
Yeah, we'll maybe look into the managerial merry-go-round when it's complete, hopefully, for next week's episode.
Yeah, this summer's going to be mental for it.
Yeah, I've got some serious opinions about Chelsea. What the fuck are they doing? Right, into December. As the festive period began, it was Arsenal who were in a giving mood as they looked to have gifted Man City and Liverpool the Premier League title with three defeats in December. Fans were treated to some Christmas crackers, though, including a late 4-3 win for the Gunners and for Liverpool over Luton and Fulham.
To the feet of the Arsenal captain who can loop one into the box. It's a good header! It's a great header! Declan Rice pops up where they need him most!
But it was a lump of coal for referees as a huge error saw City denied the chance of a late win over Spurs in a 3-3 draw. Oh, Aston God. Villa were the story of the month, though, as back-to-back 1-0 wins over City and Arsenal saw Unai Emery's men move into title contention. An impressive run of four wins without conceding and had eased Everton's relegation woes and the threat of the Everton boo. As the three newly promoted sides occupied the bottom three spots when 2024 rolled around, Bournemouth, who had also lost just one of their six festive fixtures, shot up the table too. That was all enough to see Sheffield United sack manager Paul Heckingbottom as club favourite Chris Wilder returned. That's a lot of R's and W's. While Nottingham Forest also wielded the axe, replacing Steve Cooper with Nuno Espirito Santo.
Yeah, that one's a
That
shocker.
Was a weird one.
Not a fan.
Yeah. That was a weird one.
It feels very Nottingham Forest, though.
Yeah.
I can see
it. I mean, it served them well in the end, I guess, but I imagine they would have been in the same place, if not better off, if they kept Steve Cooper.
Yeah.
You kind of touched on it there. It wasn't just bad from Arsenal, and I'd argue Liverpool. It was record-breakingly bad, right? Mm. So, in the game against West Ham, Arsenal had 77 touches in the opposition box, which is a record in the Premier League for a team who then failed to score.
Wow.
And even more than that, Liverpool had 34 shots against United and didn't score, which is the most in a Premier League match ever.
Yeah.
For a team who didn't score.
United conceding shots this season has been unbelievable.
Haven't they faced over 20 shots like 11 times or something?
Yeah, they've conceded like the third highest in the Premier League history. And yet they finished, what, seventh?
Eighth, I think, yeah.
The luckiest fucking team I've ever seen. Them and Real Madrid, also, they just win.
Yeah, but Real Madrid do it with vibes.
Hey, Don Carlo, don't come for him.
Can we go back to December and talk about McAllister's fucking thunder strike at Fulham?
Yeah, what a guy.
That
is
unbelievable.
Go on, then.
That was unbelievable. For your first goal for your new club, and he goes and does that. Poh, what a screamer.
I think I put that as my goal of the season last week.
You did, yeah, yeah. You did. We've also got to talk about that refereeing error in the City Spurs game where City are essentially in on goal and the ref blows for a foul. The one thing I would say is the game happens around referees awfully quickly, but it did seem like a bit of a rash decision.
A bit of a blunder. He plays advantage, doesn't he, and then calls it when Haaland's through, and you're like,
Surely at that point, let the play go on, VAR it, and see what's happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, obviously you don't just want to complain about referees, but I wish I was allowed to be as bad at my job as they are.
Yeah, see, I wonder whether he's not blown his whistle initially because he thinks, right, this could be a red card offence. Possibly, I don't think it was, but say that's gone through his head. He's thinking, right, let the play go on, we'll bring it back. Then he's gone, no, that's not a red card offence. Fuck it, I'm going to have to blow. And he blows and doesn't realise Haaland's through on goal.
Yeah. Well, the rules don't help them in any way. Like, they're convoluted and confusing. VAR can only intervene on, like, half the things that might
happen. That's the problem there, yeah.
But then you've got people doing the VAR who obviously don't want to make their mates look bad.
Yeah, you've basically, like I've said before, you're introducing another step for human error. So what purpose is it serving?
Yeah, this point.
The whole point is to remove the error caused by the referee in the first place. But if you've got another fucking referee sat watching the same clip, you might
And it's not even a case of VAR can't work in the game because it works in other fucking competitions.
Yeah, we just have fucking idiots
it's morons running the key piece of refereeing. Villa as well, what a month for them.
Yeah,
from this moment on they really just put the foot down, didn't they, and thought, right, top four is easily achievable.
I've got a stat for us on Villa. It's technically for Jan, but it'll come up now. So they had a goalless draw with Everton in January, right? That was the first 0-0 draw they had under Unai Emery, and his first in the Prem in his 97th match.
That's his first in the Prem.
His Unai first 0-0 draw.
Does not do 0-0 draws. Having he watched doesn't. That man for a year and a half, you will go forward and you will not defend.
Yeah, it's the longest start to a managerial career in the Prem without a 0-0 by any manager in history.
See, it's quite tough as a manager not looking for a 0-0 when your back four contains David Luiz. I will give him that.
Bring it to Villa, yeah, man.
I can see you not playing for the cliche. You're like, we have to score, lads, because we're conceding two.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to score one more than you.
I think it's safe to say that Unai has rescued his reputation in England after the Arsenal spell with what he's done with Villa. I just don't think he's a big club manager. You look at his spell at PSG and then at Arsenal, clubs that are both bigger than Aston Villa and Sevilla, where he's done it before. Like, he needs that atmosphere where there's less pressure. Yeah. So that he can build into a Europa League winner, basically.
Yeah, he needs a top six team that isn't a top four team.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Which is quite a niche way of looking at it, but yeah.
Yeah, he did absolutely ruin our season, though, I think.
Yes, he did. He did.
Fucking bastard. It had to be.
And Liverpool's.
Ben, as an Arsenal fan, do you look on December as the point that was crucial in not winning the league? Or is it a result we'll come on to later?
I think the decision, the actual outcome happened at the business end of the season. I think this is the moment where, like, you're setting up yourself for the run-in. You're staging your title push. And I think if we had some results go differently there, like obviously talking about games against like West Ham, and I know we beat them like 5-0, 6-0 in the return leg, but like those are the games you have to win at home because you know your rivals are going to beat those teams.
It's the month you see what you're made of, really, in December. You get all those games churned out. You're bound to lose one. I mean, only the very great teams won't lose one there.
It's when you see how deep your squad actually is.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're relying you found out on, there, you didn't have a striker.
Yeah, you're relying on players who aren't your starters. You're relying on players who probably played four games in the last like 12 days or something. And I don't think, as much as the team has come on, I don't think the Arsenal squad's on that City level yet. And I don't think it's going to be.
I'm not
given
convinced
their level
it ever will be, though, yeah.
You're also highlighting, you know, how good is the coaching that it filters through the whole team. You know, because you could have a player come in that won't play the same role. But I don't think that was your issue. I think it was mainly the pressure of a sub.
I think
I think it was pressure of the sub.
Yeah, once you get out of the starting 11, the Arsenal squad does kind of fall off a little bit.
Not even fall off, it's just the depth is more utility players, isn't it? You know, you've got Trossard who plays anywhere across the front four.
They can do a job, but you can't rely on them for a title run.
Yeah. Get us a fucking striker, Mikel. Get us a fucking striker.
You know, you had Rob Holding last year was filling in at centre back, and he just wasn't the same quality.
No.
Yeah. And then this year, you didn't have a striker. Yeah.
I
played for Palace this season.
I think so.
I think he played about 5 or 6 games. Yeah, I don't think he played many.
$2 million, it looked like fucking steel.
I do have to say, though, after December, Arsenal's form was amazing. It won all but 2 games, drew with City, and then obviously lost a game that we'll come on to that was kind of key to the outcome of the season. But the way they recovered from that December run was they did look like title challengers, you have to say.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the sign of the quality of coaching, is to turn the squad around after the performance they had in December.
Not only that, but like I said, December's such a hectic month that you're going to lose a few. If your Jan and Feb are really good and going into March, you've got good form, you've got a chance of winning whatever you've set out to do. But December, you're bound to lose one. The problem is you lost too many against a City side that are never going to give up a chase, are they? You know?
Well, we lost 5 games, City lost 3. So I guess in a way, obviously there's the Villa loss at the end.
Fucking Aston Villa.
Yeah.
If one of those December results goes another way, who knows what happens?
Yeah. Ifs and buts. We'll go again next season. Into January now.
Oi.
A new year and new beginnings at Anfield. As January saw Jurgen Klopp announce his decision to leave Liverpool at the end of the season after a 9-year reign that saw him win the club's first ever Premier League title. And Scousers also have the biggest meltdown in human history. It did look like they might be on course to secure another Premier League title, though, as the Reds finished the month 2 points clear at the top of the table. At the bottom, an unbeaten month, which included a 4-0 thumping of Brighton, saw Luton climb out of the relegation zone, while in the battle for Europe, Villa and Spurs finished January level on points in 4th and 5th. The Klopp thing was probably one of the biggest football stories of the year, right? And the Scouse reaction on social media was fucking hilarious.
Like, obviously,
they'd lost their father.
Yeah, a certain way to them. And, like, your manager's going to leave at some point. I thought he died.
It did seem that kind of...
If you'd have gone into that without the context or, like, looking at a story of knowing he's leaving at the end of the season, you would have thought he'd passed away in a tragic accident.
Yeah.
It was one of those situations that you read the news and you knew you were going to have to go out to Clinton's and get a sympathy card for your nearest Liverpool fan.
It just means more to them, mate. That's the thing.
It does just mean more. In Jan, I'm touching on your statement about Luton there, Dan. I've got written down here, in January, I've got the month that we saw the start of Ross Barkley and Elijah Adebayo turn into prime Gerrard and Torres.
Yeah, because Adebayo scored Luton's first top-flight hat-trick since 1990, would you believe? Obviously, well,
there we are.
The
thank you very much.
Who scored the last one in 1990?
Oh, I don't know, but I can tell you Ollie Watkins became the third Villa player to reach 50 Premier League goals.
Fair play to him.
And a little nice one in here. Seamus Coleman became Everton's record appearance holder. Which is
about bloody time, to be fair.
Yeah, 355. He moved ahead of Tim Howard.
He has been there since the dawn of the dinosaurs. So,
have you got a list there, Willie, of top Everton appearance holders?
I've got second place is Tim Howard.
Is it?
Don't ask
really?
About
it. I guess that.
Yeah, 354 Premier League appearances.
I would have had Leighton Baines being in top 5, but I never would have seen Tim Howard be that.
He could be third. I didn't check any further than second, I'm going to be honest.
Surely Dixie Dean's got a fuck ton from
the Premier League appearances, I don't think so, mate.
Oh, sorry.
Let's talk a bit about Liverpool. Because obviously their title charge fell apart towards the end of the season. Do we think Klopp announcing his decision had any kind of impact on that?
Possibly. I think the big impact was Salah going to AFCON.
Yeah, and then not coming back the same player.
Literally, he was completely different when he came
back.
Yeah,
I don't know who Egypt sent back, but that wasn't Mo Salah. That was somebody else.
That was boss man.
I think you have a manager like Klopp who's leaving. I reckon it pulls the dressing room together. And they're like, yeah, it's got one last shot.
Yeah, we've
got
to go out and win everything.
Whereas, I don't know, they look kind of checked out.
They had a lot of injuries. They did have a lot of injuries.
They did.
And then they had players out of form.
And then they also had players like Darwin Núñez.
Yeah, they had inconsistency as well. You know, like with so many injuries comes the fact you've got to keep swapping players. What I will say is I don't think they missed Trent that much because Conor Bradley was superb.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then he had Mohamed Salah, who was on autopilot ahead of him. So he had to do twice as much work.
I am glad they didn't win the quadruple because can you imagine how insufferable every Liverpool supporter would have been? Oh my God.
I think I'd have stopped watching football.
I think I would have probably watched the Scottish League from then on.
Yeah, I don't want to hear McManaman talking about how much it means to them all for the next 17 years.
Obviously,
I heard his voice yesterday and I thought, is there a cheese grater nearby that's just on my ears?
Obviously, Arne Slot coming in now to replace Klopp at Anfield. Any thoughts on that? Are we excited for that? Are we concerned that he might not be up to standard?
No, that's what I'm excited for, is that I don't think he's up to standard.
I think whoever replaced Klopp was going to have a bad time. I don't know
who else
they could have got.
They're in a transitional period.
Yeah, I think, obviously you'd be like, oh, they won a Xavi Alonso, which was just never going to happen. But who else could they have got?
I think it's smart that they haven't gone down the normal route and they've gone for a manager who they probably will give license to build his squad for. Because they don't sack managers like United do.
No.
But at the same time, they might get another Ten Hag.
I'm going to make a prediction.
Oh, yeah?
We're going to look back in a couple of years' time on Arne Slot's first transfer window as a return to the Liverpool banter years, like when they signed Markovic and Moreno and players like that. Yeah, you watch. There'll be some
shitters. I think you'll still be there,
Dutch
though.
There'll be some absolute Dutch League shitters.
I know, but the club was kind of the same, wasn't he? I know he didn't sign most of their banter players, but his early years were still kind of memey.
Did he get... this might be a bit of a fever dream memory, but did he have Nuri Sahin on loan, or did he just go to Madrid and Dortmund?
I think that was before Klopp. That was way before Klopp.
Was it? Because obviously Klopp came from Dortmund. I would have presumed he brought Nuri Sahin.
No, I'm sure that was Brendan era.
Sign Barini, didn't he? Oh no, Barini was before.
There's the story about Nuri Sahin had basically agreed to go to Arsenal instead, and then they had a medical booked, and Sahin just never turned up for the medical.
To be fair, when you look back now, bit of a saviour because he did fuck all.
Yeah, he was a bit shit, wasn't he? I saw him pop up in the Champions League final last night. He's a bloody assistant manager, yeah.
He went on the bench, was he?
Yeah, there was a point where they cut the camera to Edin Terzic and Nuri Sahin was stood next to him. I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Surely he's
stick
not still
him
playing.
On. Stick
him on.
It is bad that he got replaced in that Dortmund team by Mikel Moreno.
Oh, yeah.
The man who couldn't cut it at Newcastle. Anyway, enough about fucking Nuri Sahin. He doesn't matter.
Yeah, because Klopp still bought the likes of like Karius, Klavan. So,
oh, God, yeah.
Ozan Kabak.
At least they weren't big money, though. Surely they weren't big money.
Yeah, I don't think they were. But again, like, you're going to have those early signings that don't pan out. I think if they give him time to move the team on from the Klopp era, they'll be all right.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying, is I think he will get more time than you would at other big clubs.
But they're still going to need results. I think if they start missing out on Europe, he's fucked.
Do you think that if they miss out on Europe, he's gone?
I think they can't afford to miss out on Europe for that long if they want to stay.
I think he sells Salah this summer. I think Salah's gone.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either.
I don't either. I think if you get, 80 mil from the Saudi League?
Yeah, imagine if they rejected about 150.
I know.
Madness. Well, into February now, and that it saw the ban of XL bullies coming into place. And it was Liverpool who were all bark and no bite when they met Arsenal at the Emirates.
I just want some like jaunty Britpop in the background while you're saying all these.
Oh, there's going to be plenty of jaunty Britpop, don't you worry.
Oh, yes.
A 3-1 win for the Gunners started an impressive month that saw 4 wins from 4 and 18 goals scored. But Liverpool would still end the month at the summit.
Good skill by Trossard.
Off he goes, Leandro Trossard. At speed. Oh, it's in! And that seals it for Arsenal! They lead 3-1 and it's Trossard's goal!
The goals of Phil Foden and Erling Haaland saw City keep pace with their fellow title challengers, with the three sides separated by just 2 points come the end of the month. At the bottom, Burnley and Sheffield United had been cut adrift, sitting 7 points from safety, while just one win in February had seen Spurs slip to 3 points behind Aston Villa in the race for Europe. The final managerial change of the season also took place as Oliver Glasner replaced Roy Hodgson at Crystal Palace.
Fucking what a fucking transfer.
Yeah,
that
that's a great move.
That is the best transfer of the season.
We know, you tried to shoehorn this in last week, but you can give it a go this week if you want. Go on.
What, shoehorn him in as the best transfer of the season?
You can't do it this week either, because I've got a stat for us.
For the money you buy,
cut him off. Cut him off.
Because we were saying a minute ago, we were record-breakingly bad in December. But in this February-March stretch, Arsenal were record-breakingly good.
Yes.
Because between the 3-1 win against Liverpool and the 6-0 win at Sheffield United at the start of March, Arsenal scored two or more goals in 8 consecutive halves of Premier League football, which is a record.
Across 3 away games from Feb to Arsenal, you were 17-0 up.
Yeah, it's bonkers how good that run was.
Jesus Christ. Yeah.
You won 6-0, 6-0, 5-0.
8 consecutive halves.
Don't sign a striker. Don't sign a striker, we're fine.
Put King Kai there, fuck it.
So was this the start of John Mateta being the greatest footballer to ever play in the Premier League?
Of course it was.
Yeah, only because Solly March was injured, mate.
He walked in, Oliver Glasner walked in, he went, John, tuck your fucking shirt in. And from then on, that's it.
Tuck your fucking shirt.
Oh, the secret's to management.
Oh, fuck.
I want to see a masterclass. You know those videos they do, like, online courses?
Yeah, the masterclass
one
tacticians.
One from Oliver Glasner. That's just him going, tell your players to tuck their fucking shirts in and pull their socks
up. I showed up to the training ground on my first tactic. John, tuck in your fucking shirt.
How much money do you want to bet they side Kieran Tierney in the summer?
Oh, yes. Palace outlaw the wearing of long-sleeve shirts in winter. Let's have
it. Yes. Shirt tucked XI, short sleeves with gloves on.
Oh,
that is the best.
No gloves, mate. You're not that cold.
That John Mateta wore gloves all year round with short sleeves.
Oh, but all he needed was the snood, and he will never be forgotten by the snood.
Literally, you need a striker that's got short sleeves and gloves on. You need a centre attacking mid that's got a snood.
Then you need a left back who's done time.
Shirts. Yeah, you need all tucked in shirts across the back four and a keeper with joggers on. That's how you win the league.
It was somewhat sad to see Roy go. I mean, he'll probably be back in about a year. But I've got a really funny Roy Hodgson story for you, to round off his time as a Premier League manager. So obviously Roy had a spell at Inter Milan back in the 90s as manager. He famously forced Roberto Carlos out the door because he kept playing him in midfield rather than at left back. I think that's every fullback's dream now. Carlos was missing a trick.
I know.
But anyway. In his autobiography, Andrea Pirlo revealed that Roy Hodgson used to call him Andrea Pirlo instead of Pirlo, and Pirlo in Italian means dickhead.
I really hope Roy knew that. He wasn't just making a pronunciation mistake. He was like, I'm just going to call him that and see if he challenges me.
Maybe he was calling Pirlo as in like an absolute fucking Pirlo.
Yeah, absolute Pirlo.
The great thing about Roy Hodgson is you said he might be back, but as we know with the Crystal Palace right back door, maybe he's just slotted himself in that.
Oh,
so
nah,
we've got Klein, Joel Ward, Wan-Bissaka, and
Roy
Hodgson.
You can't replace the trio. You cannot replace that trio. We cannot replace him.
If Roy plays right back, I want to see the heat map from his first game.
Oh, fucking
you up. Know, halfway through, because of his age, he's just going to start going senile and just do like a dance from Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, he's
going
to two-fist someone on his team, mate.
John Mateta's got his shirt tucked in and Roy does not like it.
What a perler. Anyway. March saw the royal family come under fire for posting an edited picture of Kate Middleton and family. And the title picture was no clearer in the Premier League as Man City drew with both Liverpool and Arsenal. I was fucking stretching for this one, boys. Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up. With just 8 games left to play, the Gunners sat atop the pile with a single point separating all 3 teams as an all-time title race looked to be unfolding. Liverpool would ruin it, but we'll come on to that shortly. After just 3 wins from 30 games, Sheffield United looked to be slipping closer to relegation, but Luton were still fighting for survival as they ended the month level on points with Nottingham Forest in the final relegation spot. It could have been so much better for the Hatters, though, had they not thrown away a 3-0 half-time lead to lose 4-3 in a thriller against Bournemouth.
Room for Antoine Semenyo! We did not see this script coming! Antoine Semenyo makes it 4-3 to the Cherries!
Now, at this point, it did look like we were going to get this three-horse title race, this really exciting title race. And Liverpool did fuck it up a bit, didn't they?
They did.
I mean, I'm kind of all right, to be honest.
I mean, we took it to the final day. I think that's a bit fucking harsh, Harry.
Yeah, I guess so. But
We were there or thereabouts. As Liverpool soon as were City definitely had, not there or thereabouts.
The problem is, because City had a number one the next to their name, they weren't losing that. They weren't losing that. City don't lose the league. They
Which
win
is
the
just
league,
a mad thing to
it.
Say. Like, that shouldn't be a thing.
Yeah,
but
they just don't.
You talk about that Luton game, right?
Unbelievable.
You know
game.
I've got a stat for this.
Good.
Oh,
Bournemouth,
yes.
Give it to me.
Yes.
Bournemouth became the 5th team in Premier League history to win a match in which they trailed by 3 goals. So that's only happened 4 times prior. The last time in 2003.
I wonder if that's 3-0 at half-time as well.
Quite possibly.
Because 3-0 at half-time is a big thing to overcome. Like, you could be 3-1 down at half-time. You know, if you've gone 3-0 down, you've scored a goal, then you've only got to get 3 in the second. Well, I say only, but 3-0 at half-time, to score 4 second-half goals is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's bonkers.
My favourite part from this was a little bit out of the Premier League, but definitely Paul Scholes telling Sven-Göran Eriksson to get well soon.
I'd forgotten about this.
That is my favourite thing all season, I think. That whole video of Michael Owen, not quite sure whether he's inviting Sven to go watch the European Championships with him. It's a bit of a weird one. But then Paul Scholes telling him to get well soon, I think, takes the cake for me.
Michael Owen asking a man who has a limited time to live and might not even make the Euros...
Yeah.
To ask him, is he looking forward to it? Seems
are you
a bit crass.
Yeah, it does.
They're just
you're looking forward to the Olympics in 2050, mate.
To be fair, though, we've taken the piss out of that video, but the messages, some of them were quite touching. The ones
Owen Hargreaves one
Joe
was lovely.
Cole were,
yeah.
It's just the usual suspects fucking it up as
you. Yeah, Paul Scholes telling him to get well soon.
We were right to take away anything Paul Scholes had ever earned in his career. Because you've done it by cheating.
Yeah, between telling a man with a terminal illness to get well soon and chewing his daughter's nails off, man's
which
a wrong.
Which one of those two offences? Which one is the worst?
Oh, both.
Chewing
just
your daughter's
down,
nails off.
Two life sentences.
Yeah, both.
My favourite moment of this month, though, was in the Newcastle West Ham game, because Alexander Isak became the 2nd player to score a penalty against 2 different goalkeepers in a single match.
That's interesting.
Wow. I know. Gerrard did it in 2009 when he scored against Brad Friedel and Brad Guzan, which he's going to be the only ever player to score 2 penalties against 2 different Brads.
Against
well.
2 Brads, yeah. And
I'm
I don't
sure,
think we'll see many Brads from now
I'm
on.
I'm sure there's a player who scored against 3 goalkeepers.
Champions League, mate.
Yeah,
Champions
this League, is only in the Premier League.
We had it in a fat corner for Champions League
that would make
a year
sense.
Ago.
And you know, we were talking about how good City were. I'll just throw this one in because it's kind of mad. That 0-0 we had ended, they had 2 streaks going. They had a 47-game streak of scoring at home and 75 without a goalless draw.
That's fucking crazy.
Which is ridiculous, isn't it?
That's Unai Emery levels of scoring.
Mate, a goalless draw run was almost as long as Emery's Premier League career.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? That is unbelievable.
It's ridiculous.
To be fair, when you've got that much of the ball with that quality up front, you're not going to not score often.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
47 consecutive games at home scoring a goal is kind of bonkers as well.
Yeah.
That is mad.
Because you only play 19 obviously a season.
A season. Madness. Well, into the business end now. April saw the London Marathon take place, and it looked as if Liverpool's race had been run too.
Oh, well done.
Whey. Thank you. A run of just one win for five games, including a Merseyside derby defeat to Everton, all but ended their title chances.
There's the header, there's the second! Dominic Calvert-Lewin batters a header home! Everton are in dreamland! Everton 2, Liverpool 0. Everton 2, Liverpool 0. Yes.
It would prove to be a key month for Arsenal too, as their impressive 2024 form held until Aston Villa arrived at the Emirates, with Unai Emery getting one over on his old side and a 2-0 win that proved very costly indeed for the Gunners. Five wins from five in April saw Man City open up a 2-point gap at the summit, with Pep Guardiola's men edging closer to a fourth consecutive title. At the other end of the table, Sheffield United's relegation was finally confirmed after defeat to Newcastle, but Luton and Burnley were still in with a chance of survival. In the battle for Europe, back-to-back defeats for Spurs, including a 3-2 North London derby defeat to Arsenal, saw Villa open up a 4-point gap in fourth, while just one win in April left Manchester United clinging on to the final Europa League spot in sixth, with Chelsea and Newcastle breathing down their necks. It felt like April really kind of spiced things up in terms of the season. Like, there was a lot more jeopardy going on, apart from Liverpool, of course.
Oh, yeah. There is one thing with April, though. It's Cole Palmer month. It just is.
Yeah, yeah, mate.
Everything in my notes for this is about Cole Palmer. Some of the stuff this month was insane.
That game against United was unbelievable.
Yeah, so starting with the United game, they were leading when the clock said 99-18 for the minutes and went on to lose. The latest a team has been winning before losing in Premier League history, which, excellent work, lads. So Cole Palmer's winner at 141 is the latest winning goal in a Premier League match. And then against Everton, Cole Palmer became the first Chelsea player to score a first-half hat-trick in the Prem, the second player to score a hat-trick in back-to-back home games in the Prem, and their first player to score four goals in a league match since Lampard in 2010. He also became the first Chelsea player to score in seven consecutive Premier League home games and the third player to score 20 Premier League goals in their debut season. What the fuck was this man doing this season, lads?
Taking penalties. He's the new Bruno Fernandes.
Only when Jackson and Madueke let him, though.
Yeah, fuck off, yeah.
Thank God that Pep decided to bid him off for Jeremy Doku, because can you imagine if he'd played, how many points ahead they would have been?
I was looking that up, actually, and Jeremy Doku came up, because in like his third game or something, he got a goal and four assists. So he became the first player to get like five goal contributions, or like the fastest to get it or something, and then he did fuck all after that.
Yeah,
the man was Willian in a City shirt.
He broke a record and then put his feet up for the rest of the season. He was fucking shite. All he does is run past people and then give the ball away.
That's unbelievable. Honestly, though, that at one point up until last summer, Man City had currently the best three number 10 / left wingers that England can offer in Grealish, Foden, and Cole Palmer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Palmer as well has got like the most goal contributions of any under 21 player ever or something.
In
like
Europe.
That.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. Yeah,
unbelievable.
And you think, where would Chelsea be without him?
He did always look a quality player. When City sold him, I thought that's a bit of a mistake.
He never got the chance, really, did he?
No. I don't think it's necessarily a mistake for City or for him, because City will find someone else who will do just as much as Cole Palmer.
It's the fact that they had him, though. Like,
you've given him to someone who eventually might start competing for titles with you.
Eventually, in about 15 years.
Yeah, yeah.
I think 15's generous. I'll be honest.
Yeah, I genuinely think they'll have had
about 25 managers by then.
Have they hired a new one yet?
Enzo Maresca is on the way in, apparently.
Oh, yeah. I see.
The final interviews between him and Peppa Pig.
We'll save the managers for next week. So,
yeah, apparently Peppa Pig's assistant manager is Sammy Lee and Dora the Explorer.
Fucking hell, we are going off. We're going off the rails again, boys.
Chelsea aren't, sorry to take us off the rails again, they're just, they're doing the United thing and trying to hire someone who looks like Pep.
No, they hire the people that worked under Pep, which is what Arsenal did.
Yeah. Let's talk about Arsenal when that game against Aston Villa. This was the key moment, wasn't it?
Dreadful game.
I remember watching the game, and when the game finished, I said, it's done now. There's no way. You just know City aren't going to drop points.
What date was it? I'll see if I can find the message.
I was watching it, and they scored both in the second half, didn't they?
They were late in the game as well.
I was watching, I was like, that. You saw the first half, I was like, this feels like watching old Arsenal. We're going to pass it around a box for 400 minutes without having a single shot and lose the game later on.
It's the classic meme of the
Arsenal always try to walk it in.
The bloke holding the pipe, both are labelled Arsenal, hitting the bloke, also labelled Arsenal.
Where is it? I think Dan's first message was about how Unai Emery can go fuck himself.
Well, I've got a little stat for May that will make Dan feel better. But I think it's that thing of, again, it's your earlier in the season woes coming back to haunt you. Because if you put yourself in a position where you need to win one specific game, or win every game, I guess, to win the league, you can't bank on that unless you're Man City with a £2 billion squad.
But this is the thing. I think you have to win every game because City will do exactly the same. Like you're not left with much choice.
And if you're in a position where your opponents, you know they're going to win every game, like what more can be expected of you?
April was also the month we saw Matt Ritchie get his HGV license. I think that has to be dropped in.
Fuck the title race. Matt Ritchie could drive a lorry. Oh, excellent. This was also the beginning of the Spurs meltdown, which I think a lot of people enjoyed as well.
It's the highlight of the season.
They even continued it into May as well. Excellent.
There's Daniel. Dan's message on the day of the Aston Villa game is just Daniel going, fuck off. This football club is going to kill me one day.
Am I wrong? No. Right, let's move into May, the final month of the season. It saw Prime Minister Rishi Sunak call a general election, and it was another battle between red and blue to be crowned Premier League champions.
Whey.
Arsenal were left hoping that rival Spurs could get a result against Man City to put them top going into the final day, but hopes were dashed when Heung-min Son missed an easy one-on-one chance with the score at 1-0 before an Erling Haaland penalty made it 2-0 to dent Arsenal's hopes of a first title since 2004. On the final day, the Gunners needed to win and hoped City dropped points against West Ham. They did their bit, beating Everton at the Emirates, but it was Pep Guardiola's boys in blue that would seal an historic fourth consecutive title.
Other clubs have done it three in a row. Huddersfield did it. Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester United. No club has ever won four top flight English titles in a row. Four in a row for the formidable Manchester City.
Elsewhere, Aston Villa secured a top four spot to cap off a stunning season, while Spurs finished fifth and Chelsea in sixth, which wasn't enough to save Mauricio Pochettino's job. Despite their worst ever Premier League finish and Erik ten Hag under serious pressure, Man United secured Europa League football after a shock win over City in the FA Cup final, relegating Chelsea to the Conference League. At the bottom, Burnley and Luton joined Sheffield United in going straight back down to the Championship, while over at Brighton, Roberto De Zerbi left his job as Seagulls' boss. Everton also comfortably survived after a season of turmoil, while Oliver Glasner's reign at Crystal Palace showed plenty of early signs of promise, as some fine form at the end of the season put them into the top half. The final day was not as exciting as it could have been, which was kind of disappointing.
Well, yeah. I was just going to say this on the grander scheme. Wally, I'm sure you've probably got a stat for this, but this was the highest scoring season of all time.
It was indeed.
Beating 1992 by about 24 goals, I think, was it, Wally? Something like that?
I think it's rather. And they also played, I think, 12 more games in that season.
Yeah, exactly. So. And even though this is the highest scoring season and a lot of goals, what a fucking boring season.
It felt like pockets of it were really exciting.
Yeah, then, some games were, but the overall story of it was just naff.
Every time push came to shove, we just had what everyone expected. City
won the league, and the three promoted teams got relegated.
Yeah, the hope was we were going to get this three-horse title race where they'd all go into the final game of the season on the same points.
Yeah.
And there'd be some kind of drama, and Luton might survive on the last day and stuff like that, but it just didn't quite unfold.
Beginning of the season, we looked like we could have had Chelsea in a fucking relegation battle.
Well, I have got some cheeky stats to finish us off. So, Sheffield United became the second team to concede 100 goals. No prizes for guessing who the other one is.
Was it Derby?
But yeah. Well, on a slightly better note, Newcastle actually scored in all 19 of their Premier League home games this season, which is the first time they've ever done it in the Premier League.
Yeah, I may get a season ticket.
Yeah. And just to make Dan feel better, I threw this one in at the end. It's that against Liverpool, Aston Villa's Emi Martinez scored his third own goal in the Premier League, which is the most ever scored by a goalkeeper in the competition's history.
Hey, see, Dan, ain't no keeper better than you, mate.
Thanks, mate.
They need to get down five aside and watch you, mate. Like a fucking cat.
You'd be watching me lay on the floor, filling the goal with my belly.
I just remember one of my favourite tweets coming out at the end of the season was someone to the tune of well, I'll just sing it for you. I'm sorry, Nick Jackson. Ooh, you're going to Lille.
Oh, man.
Oh, fuck me.
I thought, what's the point of me telling you? I'll just fucking sing it.
Obviously, we've got to quickly talk about Southampton coming back up. Leeds falling apart again. I think we all enjoyed that one, didn't we?
Did you see Absolute Radio the other day? They get people sending in tweets and messages, trying to play songs or whatever.
Somebody enjoyed the mission.
This is a lovely message from Mike that says, can we please have Lovell Terrace Apart by Joy Division for my dear friend Ellen Drode, who absolutely loves this song.
I mean, the season kind of went how we expected, but I'll tell you what, there were some cracking goals this year. Yeah, I know we covered goal of the season last week, but like looking through the goal of the month each month, holy shit.
It's not quite December from 2009, but we'll get there one day.
I'm just glad that we had a Streets Won't Forget player happen. You know, we had that Papa Cisse moment with John Mateta. You know, we've got that happening.
I think there were quite a few Streets Won't Forget moments across the season, to be fair.
I meant as a player who has that season. We haven't seen that recently of a striker going, you know, Mitrovic does it every now and then. But John Mateta to come from literally scoring 3 goals in 3 years to scoring, what was it, 2 hat-tricks in the space of 6 games?
Yeah. And one of the best young player performances of all time. So,
you know, Harry always jokes to us, oh yeah, I've got a poster of him on my wall. He's definitely got a Glasner and John Mateta poster on his wall.
He's writing fanfiction.
But I've got erotic art of it, yeah.
Are you a secret Crystal Palace fan? Is this what's going on?
Well, we've gone from Brighton. We've gone up the M32. We're back at Palace now.
I mean, it may as well be because we are never going to cover Norwich on this podcast.
No, we're not.
Yeah, you've gone from the god-awful canary of Norwich to the eagle of Crystal Palace. It's a far bigger
goshawk of Woody is the goshawk of Gibraltar still, but there we are.
The shite hawk of the Azores.
We might talk about Norwich next season because obviously Russell Martin, it will either be sacked or live out a decent season at Southampton. And that's the closest we'll get to.
I've got a bit of insider information for you, boys.
Is he getting sacked already?
Is he going to Chelsea?
I happen to have met somebody close to Russell Martin in recent months for something I've been working on.
Mm.
From what I've been told, he will be going to Brighton.
Really? That's breaking news.
See, look at what we're giving you on this podcast. Yep. We found sources. We've given you information that nobody's given you. Russell Martin to Brighton. Watch it.
Do you know what's going to happen, though?
It's going to move.
No, before we fucking release this pod, the day before we release this pod, Russell Martin's going to be announced as Brighton manager.
Oh, he is, yeah.
100%.
The other thing is, we've buried the shiny new information an hour and 20 minutes into our season roundup.
Damn, would we have it any other way? I'll tell you what, I'll clip we're it. Like, we're like the social Athletic. Media clip.
We've just put it behind a paywall, basically, but you have to suffer for us for an hour and 20 minutes. Yeah.
The payment is more emotional than actually any kind
of
money.
You're mentally tired. Here's your tidbit of information.
Yeah, that's the last bit you're getting. Let's end the episode here. It was a pleasure creating our own Premier League years. Thank you very much for joining us. If you haven't already, please give us a 5-star rating and a follow on Spotify. It really helps us out. If you want to follow us on social media, all the links are in the podcast description. And if you've got anything you want to tell us, any great football stories, your thoughts on the Premier League season just gone, please email us. It is thestreetswon'tforgetpodcast@gmail.com. Boys, thank you very much for joining me.
It is a pleasure as always.
Always a pleasure.
That's not how it's done, my friend.
I could. Do you know what? I can't see you. I can see your face.
He was about to go, have a good weekend, and he went, fuck, it's Sunday.
I was going to say have a good week, because it still applies, but...
Well, I'll try and have a good week anyway.
Have a good hour, mate.
We'll see. Well, fuck it. We'll see you next week.
1, 2, 3, 4. Gira can hit them. Did!
From David Villa, great finish.
He's done just that, he scored! Janinho's done it!
Yakubu making another glimpse of goal here!